show.
You have all made it through the dance. You have all made it.
Coming to you from the X-Access, it's John of All Trades with your host, John X.
Welcome to the John of All Trades podcast, episode 80. I'm your host, John X. Thanks for joining us. Glad to have you back once again. This is also day two of Denver Film Festival coverage. Man, what a great event. I'm just super energized by getting to meet all these great people who make these wonderful films and have all come together in my city, having everyone in one place. It's just fantastic. So first of all, a big thank you to the Denver Film Festival for inviting me. And secondly, thanks to today's guests. We did another one with two guests. So today we have David Beck and Olympia Stone. Now, they are the subject and director, respectively, of the film Curious Worlds. Now, David Beck is an artist. And one of the questions I ask him in here that sort of elicits a weird response, because we're talking about visual art in an audio format, which that doesn't necessarily lend itself well. And I'm just going to go ahead and tell you right now, go to the John of All Trades website. It's JONofAllTrades.us and check out some of the links there, because you're going to want to get a visual sense for David Beck's work, because it's intricate. It's moving, it's small, whereas a lot of art is super grand in scale. His is scaled down. I would argue it's no less grand because of how intricate it is and how it moves and what it means and what it symbolizes and how much is going on. Basically, he's creating worlds. He's creating very small worlds, very intricate worlds, very cool worlds, and Olympia Stone has been working with him for about 5 years now and capturing his art, capturing not only his process, but some of the pieces that he's done. And they are cool, cool pieces. You hear me allude to some of them. There's one that's like in the shape of a rhinoceros that is opens up into a bunch. There's like doors and it opens up to a bunch of little dioramas. And then there's one called Opera that he worked on for 6 years. There's one that's currently on display at the Smithsonian. I believe it's still currently on display, but you'll be able to find it again on the blog. It's this super intricate museum piece. Like, the outside does one thing, and then you can open it up, and you look inside, and it's amazing art. And one of the themes of this week's podcast is undiscovered genius. In David Beck's case, I think the term genius is very easy to apply. When you see this film and when you see the art that he creates, you go, wow, this is like otherworldly. This is so cool and so creative and so much fun to look at. And how do I not know about this? How have I not heard of this guy? And a lot of his work has ended up in private collections. There's a small group of folks who really know him, really covet his work. And talking to Olympia, that's one of the reasons she wanted to bring him into the world more, gain him some exposure, because she was so taken with his work as a child. And I'm not going to step on the podcast episode here any more than I need to, but it's been a lifelong love of David Beck's art for Olympia Stone. So it was just a pleasure to get to talk to both of them. Before we get to it, a couple of quick plugs. All John of All Trades episodes are available on iTunes, all 80 of them. That's right, including this one, available on iTunes. If you go to iTunes, please give us a rating. Please give us a review. Also, you can subscribe there, so each new episode just comes directly to you. You don't have to do any work. Stitcher is also where John of All Trades can be found. It's radio on demand. Great service there. Just subscribe. You have access to a bunch of different stations. We hope John of All Trades is your favorite. But even if it's not, hey, as long as you're listening, that's great with me. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. Find us both there. JOAT Pod. You can stay up to date with all the episodes. It's funny, I haven't had to write episode teasers for this week because we're doing 5 episodes. Normally, I use Facebook and Twitter to tease out this week's episode, but hey, you know what? You're just getting fresh content every day. Go there. Every new episode will be posted there. It all comes back to the website. All of the Denver Film Festival episodes will be tagged Denver Film Festival, and I'll have a tab on the drop-down menu when it says podcast on the John of All Trades website. And then there's different categories. There's Geek Week. There's the Confidential series. There's going to be a new one, Denver Film Festival. So you'll be able to find them all in one place. Super easy. And you know what? That's enough talking for me. Let's get to this week's episode. We've got David Beck. We've got Olympia Stone. They are the subject and the director of Curious Worlds. It's part of the Denver Film Festival week. And that episode starts right now.
Just from San Francisco, it's only a
okay.
2-hour flight. But for me, that's
a long
week or two, a month's worth of fretting and white knuckling and misery.
Yeah, my wife really hates flying.
Well, she knows what she's talking about.
She's got her head in the right place.
That's right.
You didn't have to fly one of the crappy airlines, did you? Like, I won't
is
name
there
them
a
by
nice
name.
One.
Let's see.
Is there a nice one?
I've heard Lufthansa is lovely, but that's if you're going to Germany.
Well, let's see. How do you get from San Francisco? I guess you go around the poles, right?
Yeah, that
back to Denver.
That may not be worth the effort. Yeah. So, but so
I used to only take the train. That's how I used to know Denver, is just from the train station.
Really?
Because it stops here for an hour or two, or Amtrak time, you know.
Right.
So I knew just a couple of blocks around the train station.
Yeah.
So now I'm in a completely new part of town.
Were you, well, actually, if you go down the mall,
yeah,
you'll once you get to the other end, yeah, you'll go one block
station?
Over. That's it. Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
So
yeah.
There's a free bus right out here. and they
rode the bus yesterday with my friends.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, done it all.
You've
visited
seen
one
Denver.
Of the marijuana shops.
one
awesome.
One of the many.
Yeah, one of the many. I wanted to take a picture actually because I thought it was so interesting. You know, it's really interesting to see one of those. But you've seen them probably.
Well, they have a lot in San Francisco, yeah. But it's a different. It's medical marijuana.
Yeah. Oh, right. So that is different. That is different.
Yeah. So no recreational.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of a weird thing. I know a guy who owns a chain of dispensaries, and the one on the 16th Street Mall, all the tourists go to.
Yeah.
So what he told me, what one of the people who works there told me, is that you'll get business people come in for conferences because the convention center's not far from here either, and they'll buy edibles. And then they'll sit there and it'll make their conference much more bearable.
I totally, yeah, I can imagine that.
Well, can you can't like smoke on the street or something like that, or in those places. You have to go to your house. Or
it's only legal in your home technically.
Yeah.
But that's why they get edibles.
Yeah.
Because if it just looks like a Sour Patch Kid.
How can anybody know the difference?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
So we're not here to talk about weed. Yeah. We're here to talk about you. So here with Olympia Stone and David Beck. And you are the director and the star.
Subject.
Subject.
And star. Reluctant star.
Reluctant star.
Of Curious Worlds, which, when did you debut this initially?
The film was, the premiere of the film was at the Full Frame Film Festival in Durham, North Carolina in April of this year. So April 2015.
Okay, fantastic. Is that where you're from, or is that where you live?
I live in Chapel Hill, so okay. Durham is, you know, close by.
Right. I saw it was a project of...
It's the Southern Documentary Fund.
Yeah. Okay. And can you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, they are my fiscal sponsor, which means if people donate money to the film, then it's a way of, you know, donating money and having it be tax deductible. So it's a good deal. And then they provide a lot of support and screenings, like rough cut screenings for, you know, works in progress. So I screened this film a year ago in January, last January of 2014. And that's always kind of a, you know, intense thing to do. It's kind of terrifying.
Yeah.
But it's really important, you know, to do that too, to get feedback and figure out how to balance it along the way. But
absolutely. So how long have you been working on this?
I started thinking about
7 years old, I think.
It has been a lifelong project in a way, just because I think probably unusually, I've known David since I was 7 years old. So he was an artist of my father who had an art gallery in New York and was a kind of crazy collector. And my first film was about my father.
Yeah, I was going to say you made a documentary about him too, right?
Yeah. And it was sort of an exploration of his crazy collecting madness. And one of the artists that he collected quite a lot of was David. David Beck. And so I grew up in this environment where, I mean, it's not an exaggeration to call the house I lived in a museum. I mean, it was a museum.
Yes.
With lots
just
and lots pack. Of different stuff.
Right. Like, just a pack
packed
the
into
house.
It.
Floor to ceiling.
Really?
50 rooms completely packed with just a path walking through.
It's no kidding.
It. No, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
And so,
very good things, too.
Yeah. And so out of all that stuff, I mean, I'm not just saying this because David's here.
I'll leave.
But David's work was really one of the few, maybe the only artist that I remember just jumping out at me and grabbing me mm-hmm. and just holding my fascination for, you know, from that age on, really. And I was just totally inspired by what he was able to do. And so when I finally got up the nerve, I always knew I wanted to make a film about him, but when I finally got up the nerve to ask him,
yeah.
because he's so private and I, right. you know, didn't know how he would feel about it, I don't know, he said yes. I
think it was maybe.
we'll see.
Yeah.
But that
tentative,
was in,
okay.
that was in, well, I started filming in May of 2010. So I think
yes.
we talked about it in like January or before, December
yes.
of the year before. So
yes.
that's
wow.
when the idea first was green lighted
yeah.
in a way. And, so the first shoot was May of 2010. And then I formally wrapped the film January of 2015.
Wow. And what is the process like? You know, how much were you filming him? It, like on a day-to-day basis, a weekly basis,
well,
monthly? Like how much footage were you doing on average?
Well, in David's case, so this film was different from other films I've done previously because David lives in California and I'm
right.
on the East Coast. So right there's a geographical challenge.
Yeah.
And I really regretted and felt the pain of not being able to grab a camera and just go to his studio and hang out with him.
Yeah.
There were ways around that. So, but what we tended to do was we chose places. So we went to New York, we went to Washington, D.C., we went to San Francisco, obviously, and did sort of chunks of concentrated filming in those places and were able to really focus on his artworks in particular, which took a lot of time to film and are really challenging to film. So,
well, because they're very intricate and very small.
They're very intricate and some of them are very small and they're often are reflective surfaces and then there's peepholes to look
yeah.
through. So they're different kind of vantage points into pieces.
Right.
And in a very few cases, David actually could remove a piece so we could get better access to film what was inside.
Yeah, okay.
But obviously you can't do that with a lot of his other work. So we worked with very talented filming people, and one of them happens to be my cousin. So,
cool.
And his wife. So they shot about 70% of the film, and they got a lot of those detail shots. And that was, you know, that worked out really well.
Yeah, well, because when you watch the film, you really are drawn into this world, because the filmmaking itself is world building. And so the marriage of, you know, building a world for, that the viewer gets to inhabit via sort of the worlds that you are creating. I was wondering if you guys found yourselves to be kindred spirits in that way, because you're building worlds, you're building a world about this world. Are your processes...
The meta.
do they line up at all? Or is it sort of... Are you two different approaches?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I feel like David is definitely... I don't think I would draw a comparison because I think they're so different. But I do think that one of the things that I love about films, documentaries, is just what you just said, that you can be taken into a world that you never knew existed.
Yeah.
And the magic for me of David's work is that he does create these fully fleshed out universes. And I think that being able to film them in the way we were able to really allows you access as a viewer in a way that you don't really have necessarily in a museum setting. So that's the benefit of doing a film like this. But I don't know, David can talk more about his
I thought
process.
That the film is Posey's vision of my...
And that's my nickname, world. So
okay.
that's confusing.
Oh, sorry, Olympia. Who's this Posey?
Two names.
No, let's go with that, whatever you call her, yeah.
So it's interesting the way that you were framing it, because she is kind of touring my world, but it's her vision of the way she sees what I do. And So that's interesting to me, her take on it.
Yeah.
Opening it
Did
up.
I get it all wrong?
No, no.
Just
not,
some of it.
Not all wrong.
How was the process for you? Because everything I've read about you leading up to this is it seems like you're a very sort of private person, and this is a lot of access. And how did you feel going through that process?
It is a lot of access. Now you tell me.
it feels like a lot of access as a viewer.
Well, I agreed because I thought it would be nice to be able to see my old pieces again because we went to private homes and things like wherever they were. And I thought that would be a great thing. You know, when you see yourself on film, you see your big head on a screen, it's very unnerving, you know. And you see somebody walking around in your clothes and talking with your voice or something. You go, who is this guy? Why is he, how would he know that? You know?
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a disconnect.
It's a surreal
It's almost
thing.
Like an out-of-body experience.
Well, it is. Yeah. It really is, you know. And then I see old pictures of myself, and I, you know, there's that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, sometimes there are parts that I felt a little more exposed than I maybe wanted to be.
Sure.
But I think initially I agreed to do it because it would show the work.
Right.
And I thought that would be a good thing. So
I'm curious, Olympia, was there any temptation, because you have such a close relationship here, was there any temptation to insert yourself into the story?
Because
no. I know that's a documentary technique, though, where sometimes you can be the audience surrogate.
Early on, there was, I did sort of toy with that idea as a way to introduce David to in the film.
Yeah.
But I'm so not interested in being a part. And yet I am. I mean, I am. I can't help but be. And sure. I also can't help to, I'm not going to pretend that it's some totally objective look at this, at this person, because it's, you know, it's not possible. So I guess I just didn't think that it could really add that much. I like to tell people in screenings, and I usually to most audiences, explain my way into the film or my relationship.
Right.
Because I do think it's important to know that, you know, but
it doesn't necessarily need to be a part of the art, though.
I didn't think it, because really to me, the film is about the art and the making of the art. And then a little view, little glimpses of the maker as the mysterious man behind the curtain. But he is private, you know, and so, but I just didn't see a place for me in that story. It just seemed that would have felt kind of weird, I think.
Well,
gratuitous or something.
Yeah, it's certainly an artistic choice and one that probably didn't fit properly for this. But I was curious if it factored into the calculus given your long relationship.
So. Yeah.
David, I'm interested in, and this is kind of a tough medium to talk about art, because it reminds me of a line that I've heard before. It's actually talking about love is like dancing about architecture.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about art is kind of the same thing.
Yeah,
yeah.
And given that this is online radio, this is challenging. But for those who haven't seen the documentary or maybe don't know your work, what is the best way that you describe it to people?
Well, that's a terrible question.
You're welcome.
You know what I love, though?
It's so hard because I get that question. What were you going to say?
I'll bet
made this hilarious comment years ago when I interviewed you for Dad's film. You said people ask you what you do, and you said that you make tiny animals, and then the people just think you're really weird.
Well, right. I said funny animals that move. Yeah. And they think,
right.
They go, okay, that's enough.
But it is really hard to describe his work.
Because I've been thinking, that's why I asked you the question, so I wouldn't have to.
I could describe a piece to you, and it would sound like an idiot. I mean, well, I made a rhinoceros that's like almost life-size rhinoceros, and it's made out of 60 boxes that you open up, and they're like tiny little dioramas inside with anarchists running all through it, and it sounds like I'm an idiot.
But what you just described makes sense to me because I've seen
it on
film.
And you go,
yeah, perfect.
Well, yeah, so I don't know what to say. Some of the pieces are like dioramas. They're like, or box constructions. Mm. However, one of the things that I started doing was thinking about the outside of the box, say, for instance, of a diorama. Right. So the outside became like either a little building, like my
museum piece,
or the Dodo Museum is like a building, and then there's some of the pieces then became animals, like a rhinoceros. I have a big pig that has a drive-in movie theater on the inside,
cool.
which is really spectacular.
It is. I wish it was in the film.
I know. That would be fun to see. Yeah. So, but it is difficult.
But do you think of yourself primarily as an architect? I mean, as an architect, as a sculptor, but you do... I mean, you do create buildings, too, in a way.
Well,
but do you call yourself a sculptor?
I think sometimes I say that, or I make objects, because it's not... If you say you're an artist, it's always, oh, so you paint.
Right.
Or if you're a sculptor, it's wood or bronze or clay or stone or something. So it's, you know, it opens up a dialogue, so you have to kind of keep paring it down. Is it realistic, or is it representational? Is it abstract? You know, there's a whole litany of stuff.
Yeah.
So I don't think of myself as an architect. I use architectural sort of motifs and things as inspiration and include them, but I've never made it. None of the pieces that look like buildings, it's more like I'm referencing something. It's not that I'm trying to make a building or...
But that's true of your animals, too. It's like you're just using that as inspiration. They're not meant to be realistic.
I'm not reproducing nature. I couldn't do that.
Right.
It's a reference point.
Oh, yes.
And you look at it and you go, okay, this is a rhinoceros.
Right.
Like, this is a museum.
Right.
But once you get into it, it's representing something else.
Yeah.
I thought of, was it the opera piece where you inserted yourself as a penguin, or was that an earlier piece?
That was the myopic orchestra.
Band shell for a myopic orchestra. Yeah.
Right. The myopic orchestra was really cool. Just, you have this tiny little reference that is about your fear of nuclear proliferation.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when you dig into the art that way, that's why I wanted to sort of pose the question, how do you explain your art? What is the entry point for people? Because once you get there, it's so rich. And so when we talked about world building,
thank you.
It was so cool to each one is its own little world.
Right.
And one thing I'm curious about, because I'm not very artistic myself. I don't draw very well. I don't build things. How much of art is actually engineering, and how much of it is actually carpentry? Because I was struck by, there's a section in the film where you're talking about hinges.
Oh, right.
And piano hinges. And I'm thinking, wow, he has to think about hinges. He has to think about functionality. He has to think about the way these buildings or these objects operate, not just the way they look aesthetically. So how much of, say, you know, engineering or principles that go into what people might think of as non-artistic... How much of that goes into your process?
Well, I try to make it artistic. I mean, like the physical aspects of if I want something to open or close, then it requires some sort of hinging mechanism or something like that. But I try to make that integral into the piece itself, so I try to make it interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And the pieces that have animated parts or something like that, I try to make those parts as interesting because they're just as important as the object that they're moving, say, for instance, the dragonflies and things like that. So I don't really, I mean, there is some engineering aspects to it in that it has to work a certain way.
It has to have functionality, right?
But it doesn't, it has to look good and it has to be just, you know, part of the whole thing.
It has
that's
to
happening.
Feel organic to the piece.
Right. It can't be just like slapped together.
Right.
So I don't think, I mean, it is a lot of problem solving, but I still see it as part of my art. You know, I mean, if I'm carving something, I mean, that changes constantly and there's a physical aspect to that of gluing up wood or whatever that you wouldn't necessarily think about, but because you're used to seeing sculpture like that. But when it has an extra element like a moving part or something like that, people move out of that realm. They shouldn't. But
they shouldn't. That's interesting.
I'm hoping that they see it, that it's integral in the piece. It's not like an extra something that's divorced from it.
Right.
Is that making any sense at all?
Yeah, no, that makes excellent sense. In your estimation, is too much of the art world confined by notions of what art is and should be? And do you fancy yourself pushing those boundaries?
Well, I think that art is a really, really big table, and there's room for everybody. You don't necessarily want to sit next to everybody, but it's, you know, there's good art, bad art, there's indifferent art, but, you know. So, I don't know. I mean, there are schools that pop up, you know, that if you're not an abstract didn't move into abstractism or something like that, then you're a conservative or something like that.
Right.
But I don't know. You know, I think there's merit in almost everything, or at least I hope there is. I mean, if somebody's serious, they're gonna. You'll see it eventually. So.
Yeah, yeah. It will emerge from within right. them. Which it brings me to another interesting question about this film. One of the concepts that I'm most interested in is sort of undiscovered genius. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that, at least pertaining to the materials around the film, I don't think you come up, it's not stated explicitly, might be by some of the other subjects. Is that something that you're cognizant of? Is that something that you're hoping to bring more attention to?
Oh my God, yes. Yeah, I mean, I feel like that is why I made this film. You know, because I look at what David has achieved, and really one of the remarkable things is that the pieces that have been chosen that are in this film are really just kind of a small fraction of the other amazing things that he has that are not in the film, you know? And I just think what he's doing, he's like no other artist that I know of. He's totally, totally unique. And people don't know. I mean, some people know. It's not like he's a total unknown,
right.
You know, the Smithsonian. He's got, you know, huge, important collectors. But the, you know, the random people on the street definitely don't know who he is. And I really do hope that the film helps, you know, helps to expose him more. Because, I mean, not only do I think that it's inspiring,
right.
You know, just to see what people are capable of doing, but I also think that David should be driving a Rolls Royce. I'm only kidding. No, but he, you know, I
think... Another Rolls Royce?
What am I going to do with another Rolls Royce? David, is that something that you are interested in? Getting more acclaim, more widely known?
Well, I don't really think about it so much, to tell you the truth. I mean, that sort of sounds false, but I really enjoy working and spending most of the time in our studio. And so I do some, you know, I have like a little website and I do show to gallery and I have to do some of that stuff, but
sure.
I prefer not to, you know.
Yeah.
Be out there hawking yourself.
Yeah, I don't like doing that. So
doing the self promotion.
Yeah.
How has it been doing the film festival circuit then? Doing things like this?
Well, it's very different for me. I sit in a room all day long all by myself. You know, I talk to myself or I have a rant and start screaming at the wall. But so now I get to yell at other people.
And he's wearing a tie.
And I'm wearing
he
a tie.
Pointed that out.
You can scream at me if you want. It makes you feel better. I won't take offense.
No.
You know, it's funny. You actually say that in the film, too. At one point,
What's that?
It's better to have a conversation with someone else, not just yourself.
I know from experience. I talk about that with because I play music with
a
group of people, mainly this guy, Bill Nordker. He and I, we have a small band. Well, it's small because it's only two of us, but it's called The Melancholics.
The Melancholics?
The Melancholics.
It's the perfect name.
That's a fantastic name.
Thank you. It's only sad song. In fact, we play in the film, and
that's
some
right.
of the songs that we wrote are in it. Yeah, that's one of the aspects of my life that I'm most proud of.
Yeah, absolutely. Because in the film, it's you get a real sense for how much you enjoy working. You look at your desk, and your desk is covered with all sorts of materials and pieces and tools. Are you able to? Do you do well with downtime?
Well, sometimes I veg out with Netflix, but I do spend a lot of time working.
Are you able to turn
it off?
But
I have friends, and I go to the movies, you know, things like that. Do I turn it off completely? No, I think about. I find that sometimes when I run against some sort of a problem in what I'm doing, that I have to sort of turn off. It's like a kind of a conscious thing, but it's almost like tricking myself.
Right.
Like I'll like go for a walk or I'll lie on a couch and go, well, I'm not going to think about that.
Right.
And then a solution.
But it's working behind the scenes,
a solution kind of pops, you know, bubbles up through that. So,
yeah.
But, yeah, I do. I kind of think about what I'm working on most of the time.
It's funny because something like opera, when you made that piece, it took you 6 years, right?
Yeah, it was a long haul.
Were you working solely on that for 6 years, or were there other projects along the way?
I did one or two things in between because I needed to make a little money.
Right. That was actually going to be my question.
Yeah, well, see, that was like...
But even you were commissioned to do that piece.
It was commissioned, but I, you know, after 6 years, you know, there's nothing left.
Right.
You know, so it was not a... None of these things are like, you know, I mean, I scrape by.
Okay.
That's how it happens, basically. Keep your expenses down, careful, and scrape by. It's better than working. Ha, yeah.
Ha. But you will, like, make, like, during the building of the making of the opera piece, you made some smaller pieces that you could then sell and get
sold.
A little extra
yes,
cash
to,
flow.
To keep going.
Yeah.
Yeah. What? Yeah, that was a lot. 6 years on one thing is really difficult. And the people at commission weren't expecting it. You know, I mean, they were very, very right. pleased afterwards.
Sure.
It was sort of at a certain point I was going, I just pull out all the stops on this one, you know, really go. So I ended up carving like 200 and some people in that thing.
Yeah.
It's really something to see.
It's pretty labor intensive. So I'm curious about, in terms of making a living as an artist, how much of your work is commissioned versus non-commissioned?
I don't know the numbers on that. I'm not doing anything on commission now. I did three little things last year, but a lot of times it's just on what I do, you know, and then hope for the best.
Right, and you just say, here it is. And
right. The gallery takes it, and they try to find somebody. But, I mean, there are times, like some of the larger pieces
well, the
that
elephant,
are in the film.
Right? It's just something
me.
That you...
That's just me,
yeah.
What I'm working on now. There are other things that are in the film that were commissioned... You know,
sure.
So
how many pieces, say, in a year will you create and sell?
Oh, not that many. Yeah. I don't know.
Four?
Maybe. Handful. But they're small. The smaller pieces.
Yeah. Small, but extremely intricate.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. But through those four pieces, you do well enough to sustain yourself then?
Yeah, if you're careful. If I'm careful.
Right. Yeah. Wow. That's really cool. Olympia, this process... you started filming David 5 years ago.
Uh-huh.
You're now touring it. I'm sure you've seen this more times than you can even count. What has the reaction been so far?
I think overall people have been really into the film. I mean, it's been gotten a great reaction. I think David, you know, when David comes to the screenings, people just want to talk to him, you know? And it was funny because at Full Frame, when we showed the film, we joked because people were like running out of restaurants. Oh my God, you're David Beck. can I talk to you? Like, it was really incredible. And I do think that the people that connect with the film really connect with the film.
Yeah.
Like another person that just saw the film recently found this dodo matchbox thing
It
was just really sweet and like dug it out of their thing and sent it to me and I sent it to David. And, you know, people are, I think it's inspiring to people. I hope, you know, that's what I hope they take away from it in part. So I think overall it's gotten a great reaction. I think art films, quote unquote, are always a tough sell. And whenever I tell people that I make films about art, it just sounds either like really pretentious or,
right.
You know, it's like, what could be worse? You know,
right.
A film about
Let's
art sounds horrible. It sounds really boring. Or something you're forced to do, like eating broccoli. But I hope, you know, I'm trying to not do that, obviously.
I would argue that you succeeded.
Well, I hope so. I mean, that's what I'm after is not making really, really boring films that no one wants to watch.
Well, it's funny. On this podcast, I had someone who makes their living as a painter, and he got his master's degree, so he got his MFA in painting. And I said, what was your thesis on? And he said, the drying times of this media versus this media. I go, you wrote your thesis about paint drying?
Wow.
And it's funny because he works in acrylics. And so he gave me sort of a synopsis of why he does and how that influences how he works.
He wants to slow it down.
And so,
right? The drying times.
Yeah. So, he has to work very fast.
Yeah.
And listening to him describe it, though, I go, wow, that really informs your art. I didn't know on this podcast that it was possible for us to have a great conversation about paint drying. But it is possible. Yeah. So
that's cool.
I think no matter what you're doing, yeah, you're making a film about art. But I think about, you know, some of my favorite documentaries. One of them is Exit Through the Gift Shop.
I know. That's a great film.
Yeah, which is a lot of fun. And granted, that's, you know, the filmmaker inserting himself in it pretty heavily.
Yeah. It's an interesting film.
To your point, David, I think art can be anything. And so there's a lot of real estate here.
Yeah.
You find the right subject, anything is gold.
Yeah.
So what are the plans for this going forward? You're obviously here for a few days. Where do you go next?
Well, so I actually have a bunch of screenings coming up. I'm going to another film festival. You know, anyway, I'm flying back to Colorado next weekend, actually, for a different film festival. So I'm doing, show screenings and the sort of ending out the film festival thing, setting up some museum screenings, because hopefully that seems like it would be a really natural place to show the film.
Seems like a good fit, yeah.
And looking for distribution, we'll see what happens with that.
Sure.
And the film will be on PBS, on public television next fall. So, you know, so I see that as the life cycle. And hopefully, I mean, ultimately, I would love for this film to get into educational, you know, the educational market, because I feel like, you know, I think David has a lot to offer. You see all the, I mean, a lot of his different techniques that he uses for his work, which I feel like a lot of people don't, I mean, I don't know. I can't imagine art schools are teaching a lot of that stuff. It's just interesting to see. You didn't learn it in art school. Yeah.
You went to Carnegie Mellon, right?
Yes.
And
I've got a BFA.
Okay, perfect. How was the education that you received? Did you feel satisfied by everything that you learned there, or did you go, this isn't enough?
Well, I transferred in. I'd bummed around for a while before I went there, and I ended up there. It was something that I always wanted to do as a child, to go to an art school and to be around other artists my age and people that I would take seriously and they would take me seriously. So when I had the opportunity to go, it was really like a dream come true. So I got there. I was a little disappointed at first. However, I made great friends of other students. And I think we realized right off the bat that if anything was really going to happen, we'd had to make it for ourselves. So we found that there were different galleries in the department that you could sign up for and have shows.
Yeah.
So we would have these, we would sign up for them all the time and have these really whacked out shows.
Cool.
And then we started doing performances, making movies and things like that. And it was a fantastic, really fantastic art experience. As for the teachers and stuff like that, they were helpful, though they pretty much left me alone. I kind of commandeered an area in the sculpture department and turned it into my own studio, and they would come and visit me. And I don't know. I mean, I felt like I had some time to really just work on things and kind of find myself. So that part was really, really good.
Yeah.
And, you know, there were guys there that knew their craft and knew what they were doing.
Right.
And so, I mean, if there was ever a question, but it was mainly being with other students.
Sure.
I mean, that's the biggest deal for any kind of school kind of situation.
And I just have to say, one of the things that I wish could, I don't know. That is a really interesting chapter of David's life and something that I never knew about before I started working on the film, because he was in this really, really interesting performance art. He was a performance artist. I mean, he was doing, I mean, among, you were doing sculpture too, but you were doing these really out there, like wacky, crazy performances. And just knowing David now,
all the sets and all the costumes,
and wore crazy costumes, and you went to like a Catholic school and did things with nuns.
Yeah, I mean, that was just a good show. We were asked. It was a performance called "Bad Posture Can Ruin Your Life," and we always ended in a song. You know, so the song was "I'm in the Mood for Love," and we talked all the nuns into singing it, and they're like swaying back and forth. I'm in the mood for love.
Yeah, it's so good.
It was. Oh, they were so cute.
But also just knowing David, it's like I couldn't have been more surprised that he was like had this very extroverted kind of part of his artistic life that also feels so different from what he's doing now. You know, I always think it's so interesting to see where an artist has been and the kinds of things that they've experimented in along the road, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And yet there is performance in all of his pieces, you know?
Now so it's just on a tiny.
It's on a tiny scale and it's not your physical body.
Right. It's not me doing it.
Yeah.
Is there any truth to, when we're talking about art school, that it's important to learn a bunch of theory and then once you sort of discover yourself, you need to sort of unlearn it?
Well, that's what Charlie Parker says about chords. Right. You know, he says, yeah, memorize them, forget them, and then start playing. But
yeah.
I don't know. It depends. You know, that's like a continuum. Some people say that art goes in this line, so you should learn all these things, learn all these schools and stuff like that. But what if they're wrong? Maybe it should have gone that way.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that if you're going to be a serious artist, you should be aware. You don't necessarily have to follow a certain path or line or way of thinking or philosophy, but I think you should at least be aware of what's happening. I mean, unless you are a complete outsider, but there are very few people that are really, you know,
that are truly outside. Yeah.
Right. I mean, now there's fake outsiders, but
where being an outsider is sort of more of a posture rather than.
Well, I mean, but who knows? Maybe that's okay in the long run too.
Who's to say? I mean, I think about I'm in improv classes right now,
uh-huh.
and they have rules for us. You know, like don't ask questions,
don't
you know, don't use profanity, that kind of thing. And they say once you know all that, and once you sort of establish some good habits, then those things become tools in your toolbox that you can use. So I mean, it's
a discipline,
exactly.
Yeah, it's like you're.
And you don't want it to necessarily be a crutch. I interviewed a music journalist once, and he said if you want to be a music journalist, you should not only know music, you should read a lot of music journalism so you know what's out there. So that you know, maybe you don't want to write exactly the same thing that everyone's written about the Beatles' White Album, so that you sort of understand what's out there.
Right.
That seems to be true in art, and that's a long way of sort of agreeing with you.
Oh.
So I'm good at that.
Thank you.
So, David, what's next for you? What kinds of things are you working?
Well, we're working on the sequel.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a 12-part miniseries.
Curious Worlds 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Yes, right.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, I hope that I can continue to work. I mean, that's, you know, I'm getting old and feeble, so it's only a matter of time.
Break.
There's only so much left, you know.
I really
and you play melancholy music, you say.
Well, I don't know. Yes, we do. And I've written some of these songs that I'm really very proud of. There's one song that's in the film. It's called. We wrote it because people would go, "Why don't you guys play something you know?" So we wrote a song called "Something You Know."
It's a really good song. It is. It's a good song.
It reminds me of I think it's PCU where the two bands are called Free Beer. And everyone gets laid. So come to the show. Free beer and everyone gets laid.
That's good.
So maybe that could be your next hit.
I don't know. I'll have to talk to Bill about that.
But I think that's everyone's goal. I left my corporate job about 6 months ago.
Uh-huh.
And
Someone
asked me, they said, you know, what do you plan on doing in 5 years? And I said, I want to continue having success in whatever it is I'm doing here so that I don't have to go back to corporate. That's all. I tried to distill it down to one thing, and I go, that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
I don't want to go back to working for someone else.
Right. Yeah.
And, I mean, that seems to be true in your case. But
yeah, well, I as a little kid, that was sort of my goal, not to work for somebody else.
Yeah. So,
and I don't know why I had that, but it was really since I was very, very small.
Has this documentary increased the your exposure in the way that you hoped Olympia, and has that had an influence on people asking for your art?
Well, people are more interested. They contact me in the gallery and stuff like that. So who knows? Maybe.
Yeah, I think it's still early. I think that I do feel like I think it could be helpful in that way. I mean, I hope so.
Yeah.
You know, but for sure, I think people have responded and, you know, and have gotten in touch and have asked me how to, you know. So there have definitely been things that have come out of it, so.
Well, I'll tell you what. I was super endeared by this film, and I really enjoyed getting to see how you make art and the art that you make. So I'd just like to say thank you for allowing this process.
No, thank you.
To highlight it, because it's, and
for the Denver Film Festival for connecting us, because this is something I might not have otherwise had exposure to. Right now is the time where we plug whatever you want to plug. If there's something on the web, screenings, this is going to air on Tuesday. What is that, November 10th?
Screenings will be over. Yeah, okay. You mean so upcoming things. I mean,
anything on the web. Where can we find you, David? Where can we find you, Olympia?
Yeah, let's give our websites.
Yeah.
So my website is floatingstone.com, and you can also check out a trailer to my new film, which is about another really interesting artist named Elizabeth King.
Cool.
And
how do you know about Elizabeth?
And I found out about Elizabeth because I interviewed her for David for this film. She's in this film.
Oh, good.
And she's a friend of David's, and in some ways a kindred spirit, I think.
Yeah.
And fascinating. And
she's a much better talker than me. That's for sure.
Yeah, that's not.
I think you sell yourself short.
Yeah.
Wait till you hear her.
And David,
you know what? That's fair.
Your website is?
Oh, davidbeckartworks.com.
Okay.
You can see.
It's funny. This is something you probably already know. When you try and type you into Google, it wants to autofill to David Beckham.
I know.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. That's my alter ego. I use that name when I advertise underwear and things like that. So.
You're doing quality work.
Yeah,
there.
Well, thank you. It's the least I
do. Also want to, this might be too much. You can cut this out. But David has made these amazing Dodo t-shirts, which I'm also selling on my website.
Nice.
You can have an original David Beck Dodo,
cool.
Which is very cool.
T-shirt.
Right.
Well, I'll tell you what, guys. Unfortunately, this is going to go up after the screenings. Wow. But if at some point it becomes available online and we can point people to it there, stay up to date with both of you on your websites, we'll certainly link to it.
Yeah,
but
great.
Olympia, awesome. David, thank you for taking the time and chatting with me here and letting me get in your world.
Well,
thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, it was a pleasure.
That wraps up episode 80 here on the John of All Trades podcast. Thank you to David Beck and Olympia Stone. Be sure to visit their work. They're such great people, and they made an amazing film. So wherever you can, however you need to do it, you got to check out this film. It's great. You got to check out David Beck's art. He is just, he's a mad genius. What can I say? It was a pleasure getting to know him. So let's pay a couple of bills. First, John of All Trades podcast is a production of Deft Communications, Denver-based. Content, training, engagement, whatever you need, we got it for you. And our sponsor is 4Degrees, the number 4DEGRE.ES. Campaigns, online marketing, consumer goods, whatever you have, 4Degrees is going to be the best at getting your message in front of the people who need to see it. They know all the platforms. They have all the SEO. They'll do the back end work. You have your product. You need to get it in front of people. 4Degrees is the best vehicle for doing so. So check them out on the web. The number 4DEGRE.ES. I'm back here tomorrow. We got a brand new episode. Man, it's 5 episodes in 5 days. It seems like you should pay for content like that. But nope, we give it to you for free. It's all coming to you from the Denver Film Festival. Go to the John of All Trades website, check out the blog, and hey, see what it's like. You'll get a flavor of the festival through me, which is great time. So, we'll see you tomorrow. Until then, say goodnight, Gracie.